Welcome to the Whitaker Report, where we take a close look at the art and science of economic development. I'm your host, Dean Whitaker, President and CEO of Whitaker Associates Incorporated. In each episode, we introduce you to leaders in the world of corporate site selection and economic development. We speak to members of the economic development community to provide you with insight into the best and next practices in the profession. In this episode, we will have as our guest Maureen Donahue Krause, President and CEO of the Detroit Regional Partnership. Maureen joined the Detroit Regional Partnership in July of 2020. Before joining the DRP, she was CEO of Donahoe Krause LLC, an economic development consulting firm. Maureen has held positions as Chief Executive Development Officer at the Indy Chamber Indy Partnership. She has been Vice President of Economic Development for the Detroit Regional Chamber and has served as Director of the Oakland County, Michigan Department of Economic and Community Affairs. Maureen is an accomplished economic developer with a demonstrated history of leadership in the economic development industry, both nonprofit and government. Please join me as we welcome Maureen Donahue Krause to the Whitaker Report.
Okay, terrific.
Please join me as we welcome Maureen Donahue Krause to the Whitaker Report.
Thank you, Dean. Perfect to be here. I was hoping we weren't disconnected, you know, our new way of doing things, but I'm really pleased to be able to talk to you today.
Well, it's such a delight. We've known each other a long time, and it's fun to have this opportunity to kind of catch up a little bit on what you're doing now and learn a little bit more about the Detroit Regional Partnership. Can you kind of fill us in a little on the detail of what it is and what it does?
Be very happy to do that. So the Detroit Regional Partnership has been in existence for a little under 3 years. Our region, our business leadership in our region, decided about 4 years ago that we needed to look at delivering best-of-class economic development to our region. We have a lot of strong assets. We have a terrific story to tell, but we really didn't have the structure, the organization to do that in the appropriate way. So they went out, looked at best of class, hired McKinsey and the Brookings Institute to put together some very clear strategies on our work because we want to be data-driven and strategic for our investors and our community partners. And we were off. So we tell our story and promote our region around the world. Close to 70% of our work is international, and it's primarily focused on business attraction with the understanding that our public partners in the 11-county region we serve do the retention and expansion side of the shop.
That sounds like a really good partnership that you've built up over the years and not so long ago. How long have you been at the organization?
So I've been here a little over a year, started last July 1st, you know, middle of the pandemic. So that represents
good timing.
Interesting challenges. But the good news is I have a terrific team, and a quarter of them had actually previously worked for me.
Oh, wow.
So, and, you know, it, not necessarily in Detroit, but maybe at Oakland County or other places I had been. So there was a great familiarity on strengths that we all have and how we work together best. So that was very helpful. And for me, it's been interesting because it has been done primarily under quarantine. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, our team, we're crushing all our metrics and they're delivering. We can't wait to get back into proactively meeting our customer, going out to them. But for now, we've found ways to manage maintaining the relationships internally as well as communicating the message externally.
So is your team again traveling, or are they working from home?
So just starting to do some travel, primarily in North America. You know, our international customers all have different restrictions and regulations on letting people in, but we are looking at doing a couple of international trips before the end of the year. domestically. It's all about where the customers are. You know, we had a very successful site consultant trip to Atlanta recently with 9 key meetings. And so we just look at the markets and meet the customer, whether it's a site consultant or a company, meeting them where they're at.
I understand. So you've been there about a year, so you've had a chance to look around and kind of assess things and figure out what your challenges are. What do you see the challenges for the partnership now and kind of going forward?
Absolutely. You know, I will say our board is very clear. We will celebrate our success, but we also need to identify obstacles to success and look mm-hmm. to solve them. So, you know, our I guess I would say obstacles or what are the threats to what we're doing here. As I said, we've been more than matching our metrics. They were a set of metrics last year that we exceeded on average by 130%. This year, the metrics were doubled. We're pretty close to exceeding them already as of September 30th. So we're in a good position. But there are still threats to our work or you know, issues, obstacles that we need to overcome. Many of them are around available real estate, and that's just not the mega sites that have been in the news recently, but do we have 10-acre sites that are shovel-ready, or 50-acre sites, or 200-acre sites? So that's something we've been addressing in one of our programs, Verified Industrial Properties, that I can share more about, but that's one area of risk. The other is the toolkit that we use to do our work. We've been doing a bit of disarming in Michigan to have the right tools that we need to compete, to be at the table, and to win deals. And this ranges everything from we no longer have an R&D tax credit, only one of 9 states that do not have that. We need to make sure that our talent programs are appropriate for companies' needs of the future. And we have to look at programs that will help meet the customer. I've talked a lot about this, about meeting the customer where they are. What does the customer of today and the future need from an incentive perspective? And what is our competition doing? And do we have the right tools to stay in that game? So I would say those are two of our biggest risks. The good news is, the risk is not along the lines of people don't want to come here. People don't want to find out what's happening here, right? So that for us has been the good news. There's great interest in our region and in our state, and we just want to make sure we can package everything together and win more deals.
I understand. Good for you. I like the term risk, and what risk are you taking in terms of how you're going about your work and what kind of some of the risks to your success might be.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have some recent successes, meaning speaking of successes, mm-hmm. could you tell us a little bit about those?
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say the bulk of our deals coming in general are smart manufacturing, and that is not exclusive to automotive. But we've also had a couple others that are interesting, and I just want to point them out because they're a little different from what you might expect. Two of our biggest successes recently include a company called ClearCover, which is based in Chicago, and they are an insurance technology firm. They came in to hire roughly 300 people. They're well past that amount right now, and they've come in, you know, within the past 6 months or so. But what was really interesting about that one is that, to start, there's no piece of real estate identified. All of their candidates are working from home, and they've been so pleased with the quality of candidates they've received, they continue to add more. The other company is based out on the West Coast and Oregon and Washington area, and they're called FCR. And once again, it came down to talent. They also have not chosen a physical location lately. Their original plan was to hire 30 people in January. They're up over 400 people right now. They were looking for a workforce that had the skill set and looked like their customer. And they found that the towns that they had spent time in on the West Coast, on the Northwest part of the United States, weren't diverse in talent and skill set. And so they found that here. And, you know, it's interesting when you think they originally told us 30. You know, we are very good at metrics and reporting out what we're doing. The original plan was 30. And now when we look at being over 400 employees, once again, they found the skilled, diverse workforce that they wanted their company to be represented by. So, you know, another great story of our talent and our talent with experience and our diverse talent. And, you know, really something we need to tell that story more about.
What type of talent attraction and retention programs do you have in your toolbox?
Mm-hmm. So once again, we when we did our original sort of baseline work on what we were going to do, we developed with McKinsey our 7 clusters that are really building on our strengths and giving us a sort of a playbook when we go and talk to companies around the world. So it's really easy to go to a trade show or just go on a trade mission or, even to travel domestically and, you know, imagine, well, we're going to meet with these companies. We're just very laser focused on being strategic on companies that make sense for the region and should want to expand here. So that has been really important. The other lens that we work on is our pathway jobs. So this was part of our work with Brookings to identify what is a pathway job and why is it important. You know, a job is important to every person who has it. So one job is just as important as 10,000 jobs to the person who has it. And pathway jobs ensure that potentially the groups of talent that were underrepresented in the past have opportunity and connection to landing those positions. So, for example, we look at pathway jobs being defined as having a good base salary. I believe we're at $18 an hour with a path to expand with benefits so that people can get those jobs, learn new skills, and grow. That's just an important pillar of what we do. We've also recently hired a director of talent solutions, and that program, as it builds up, will expand a bit. But for new companies coming to the area, we are always happy to introduce them to our very strong traditional partners, like our community college system and our workforce development, which is a super strength here in Michigan, the workforce development network that we have. But we realize there are pockets of talent that do not fit in those two categories. And it's up to us to identify and match up those talents. So the director of talent solutions is really a concierge to these companies coming in. You know, when you think about it, you bring in a company from overseas, you know, the Netherlands or Korea or whatever, and you roll out, here's all the ways we'll help you find talent. And they go back home to put together their plan. And it's like, now who do we call and how do we fit in? And it's different in every region and it's different in every state. Our talent solutions director will basically be their concierge to say, here's the talent you need. Here's where you find it. We will direct you to that source. Important whether we're looking for Bangladeshi sewers who can do sewing for automotive interiors, we had a recent one that was Korean speaking tech support that we needed. So how do we help companies find the exact talent that works for them?
You mentioned remote work earlier. Do you see that kind of as a path forward from now on in terms of the kinds of companies that you'll be working with? And you know, how do you add up the numbers? We talked about metrics earlier, and I've always wondered about what do we do with gig workers? Where do they fit into the scheme of things?
You know, it has been interesting because we have lagged a bit on investment. You know, typically economic development counts jobs and investment. Mm-hmm. We count jobs, pathway jobs and investment, and many other metrics. So there's been a little bit of lag, although we've met our goals, but we haven't exceeded them like in other categories. There used to be, you know, proportionality on jobs with investment. That has changed in areas like fintech and, you know, other types of work that is available to do at home. But at the beginning of our conversation, I talked about smart manufacturing. those jobs still come with investment. You can't build a car from home or build an electric battery from home. And so, you know, and that industry did not pause for very long during our quarantine. Certainly, they shut down and had to relook at processes and how things were going to get done to protect their workforce. But they were opened up pretty closely back after we started this a year and a half ago. And so those jobs are still out there, and they're still good pathway jobs. But I think we are in for a switch on, you know, everyone doesn't report to the office from 8 to 5, for instance. We still aren't doing that at the Detroit Regional Partnership. And like I said, if the team is still delivering and they don't want to run in at commute times but come in 2 hours later and do 3 meetings before they commute in, we have to be flexible to keep and grow the best talent. And if that's something we can offer, we're going to do it because it helps people accommodate all aspects of their lives.
Very interesting. Maureen, you've been around a long time in terms of positions held at the local government level, at the, you know, at the states level and in the regions level. From that perspective, where do you see things going in economic development? In the next 3 to 5 years, what's economic development going to look like?
Well, you know, it's interesting. 2 years ago, I would have answered that question, of course, much differently than I do now, based on the experience we've all had, the collective experience we've all had in the past year and a half. So certainly we've all had to learn about telling our story in a different way. I think one of the greatest benefits is bringing more people into the decision-making process. You know, we always think, well, once we bring someone to see our community, that's when we'll hook them. And that's actually true. We haven't been able to do that for a year and a half. So we've had to learn to create the experience remotely. But here's why I think that's important going forward. And I mentioned so many of our projects are, you know, international projects. Typically, and I've been involved in hundreds, you get coming over perhaps someone out of facilities management, engineering, finance. They come and they look at the real estate, they visit with the communities, they put the package together, and then bring a report back to the CEO, back in the parent company. Well, now, and you know, so then there's other risk factors when that happens. You don't get all the nuances you would having someone visit. I remember bringing a company in from Germany one time and doing a tour, and it was with the principal, the chairman of the company. And once he saw the competition around, he said, well, of course we have to be here. Look at who else is here. Hard to capture that remotely. Mm-hmm. However, when we're looking at sites, when we're looking at communities, now we can bring those key decision makers in much earlier in the process. So they can have, you know, tour a building with a drone or meet with a community official, with a mayor remotely. And so I think that helps us. And, you know, and communities that do it well, it helps us then in creating the experience that key decision makers need to have sooner rather than later. You know, economic development can be a process of elimination. When the key decision makers get to experience our community, even remotely, at an earlier stage, it keeps us in the game longer.
Very interesting. What advice would you give someone kind of new to the profession, just starting out in economic development? What would your encouragements be?
Mm-hmm. And you know, Dean, of course, I've spent my whole career in this. Started out as a college intern. Didn't think I would still be doing it today, but you know, I've had lots of different staff at different stages in their career through the years. And a couple of things, no matter what level of economic development you want to work at, whether it's at the state level, regional, county, I would say if you think this is something you want to do, get some experience at the local level, because that is where deals are closed. So it's really important to understand the dynamics of going through a site review process or a tax abatement process or a permitting process to build a new facility. I think when you have that understanding, it's much easier to talk about what a company will experience as they look into setting up an operation. Most companies you deal with, except for the very large ones, you are dealing with people who've never built a facility over before, let alone built a facility out of state or overseas. Mm-hmm. So before you have a deep understanding of how your local communities will work, what are the opportunities and what are the roadblocks there, you can serve much better at that county or regional or state level. So that's certainly the one thing. And even if it's, you know, almost an internship or just, you know, 2 years working in a local planning department or economic development, of course, but just understanding what makes a community tick and what their priorities are, it's just going to serve you so well as you look at bigger jobs or bigger opportunities.
That's great advice. And I think you've been very thoughtful in terms of that experience you had as an intern and how that translated and supported you throughout your career. It's very mm-hmm. cool. This is kind of a wrap-up question for us today, sure. But I'm looking into your crystal ball and looking in the future of economic development. What do you see? What do you see when you look down the road 5 or 10 years or further?
Yeah, you know, economic developers tend to be the jack of all trades, right, in communities, mm-hmm. and you get brought into many other aspects of what makes your community strong. So I think that that will continue. We will continue to be asked to do things that don't appear to be in our original job description, being very nimble to help our companies adapt to change, as well as helping our communities adapt to change, will be really important. You know, of course, can't talk about enough about the use of technology. Information travels fast. So I think going forward, it's really important. Basically, a company can find out anything they need to know about your community without even talking to you, right? Google's their friend. However, I think the communities that will win will figure out, how do we leverage our assets together, and how do we tell that story, and how do we help people understand the meaning of the data and why it's important to them? So I just see in economic development, we will have to continue to be better of leveraging our assets to tell the story to the right audience and convince them that it's important for them. I learned this in, you know, all the RFPs we put together through the years, where you just literally have hundreds of pages of Excel spreadsheets where you're filling in the numbers. How do you translate that into in a meaningful way to why a company should look at the data and then understand this data will support their growth?
That's very cool. I think you hit it on the head. Our tagline of my company is called Giving Information Meaning. And that we've been trying to do that for 31 years. So
More important than ever.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Maureen, well, thank you for sharing your insight. It's been very interesting. And your perspective as a leader in the economic development profession gives us hope for the future.
It's a fun career for anyone who wants it. And every day is different. And if you like that kind of, you know, movement around and sometimes a little chaos, it's right for you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Whitaker Report. And a special thanks to Maureen Donahue Kraus for helping us get a better understanding of the changes taking place in the economic development and the world around us. Again, I'm Dean Whitaker, President and CEO of Whitaker Associates. We hope you will subscribe to the Whitaker Report podcast on Spotify. And thank you for tuning in.